So those of you who did not receive the notice, there has been a change of speakers in Andrea's charge. Speaking, and the title is Localized Gravity in Springfield.
Is everyone talking about localized gravity in Springfield? And this is very much going to be public, hopefully very soon, together with Lisa and Andy. Then hopefully we have something else to say where any storm is affecting us, but the part of birds already is what I'm going to talk about today. So what we want to do is basically find localized gravity in Springfield. This of course would be very interesting because for one, if this happens, then at least we have to entertain the possibility that just looking for collabial compactification might not be the right way to realize our world, but that there are other options to get four dimensional gravity out of string theory. So there might be other ways we have to look for realistic string theory scenarios. Also, localized gravity has this nice feature that separation of scales goes hand in hand with separation of spatial distances, which is an attractive feature of series like this. And then the way I'm going to realize localized gravity in string theory is by extending the ADS-CFT conjecture from CFTs living on the sphere or Minkowski space to CFTs living on manifolds with bounding. These are basically two motivations. One is alternative to compactification. And the other motivation would be that we can study CFTs with bounding. And so here an outline of the rest of the talk. First, I want to review work which we have been doing earlier, which is basically studying the random sample model itself, which is like a toy model. It only has gravity, no strings you get. And tell you basically a little bit about the ADS grain, ADS 4 grain, and ADS 5. Just review some properties of the setup and say why this has something to do with conformal field series on manifolds with boundaries. Then the second thing would be that I show you how the CFT with boundary arises in the supersymmetric context in string theory with supersymmetry in string theory. And then the next thing would be to try to convince you that number two actually is true. So the first part of this would be the probe analysis. Then we will find a whole class of grains in ADS times S geometry, which themselves have the geometry of ADS times spheres in particular. To get a four-dimensional world, we'll find five grains which wrap ADS 4 times S2 inside the ADS 5 times S5, spanned by a bunch of sequences. And then in the fourth part, I want to talk about back reaction, which of course is crucial if you want to localize gravity. All right. So let me review this Van-Sandman-like model just to give you a flavor about this ADS-CFT reality on many points around. So what Van-Sandman started is basically just five-dimensional action where you have gravity, you have a five-dimensional cosmological constant. And then you add this term, this grain tension. So you have an additional term in the angular. I just have five-dimensional Einstein gravity, the cosmological constant to this side is going to be negative, and L squared is a curvature radius of the five-dimensional background radius 5 cm. And then you add this additional term, which is a grain, this tension, little lambda. And the action is just proportional to the volume, to the world volume of the brain, so this is the induced magnitude of the brain. This little lambda, of course, is bigger than zero to get a sensible model. As you find that if lambda is equal to a Christian value, I get metric, which, okay, let me say it like this. You make an answer, so then your metric has this raw product form, so I get an e to the 2a times some four-dimensional metric minus the r squared. A, this warp factor is just a function of R. And then the answer depends on what ratio of lambda to this critical value, lambda critical being 3 over L. So this is basically defined a critical value given in terms of the five-dimensional cosmological constant. And if lambda is equal to this critical value, you define the solution in your four-dimensional space-time in Minkowski space, Minkowski four-space. And if lambda is less than lambda critical, you find the alias four-space. And if lambda is bigger than this critical value, you find the Kissinger four-space. And once you accept this fact that there is this critical value where the body cosmological constant and the brain tension balance each other in such a way that the four-dimensional effect of cosmological constant is zero, it's very natural that if you have too little tension, you're left with a negative cosmological constant. If you have too much tension, you're left with a positive cosmological constant. Right, and I'm mostly going to focus on this ADS4 brain because it's quite distinct from this Minkowski and Dissiter cousins. Let me explain this in some detail. If I actually plot this function A of R, this warp vector, which corresponds to the various solutions, then we find in the Minkowski phase a warp vector which is just linear and has a kink, and then you localize gravity in this kink-like region, and you can evaluate the four-dimensional Planck scale, which is just going to be the volume of the internal space integral of this warp vector.
Wait, you're plotting what first of all?
That's it is the first one. There's A of R as a function of R. It's just the warp vector. This is R conceiving as a position of the brain. This gives me a finite number, so this is this way to see that the four-dimensional gravity, the four-dimensional units all localize the gravity. If you plot the Dissiter warp vector, you get something like this. If it's very similar to the Minkowski four warp vector, you run into this. Basically, you go to minus infinity, a finite distance away. You see the horizon finite distance away from the brain instead of running into this ADS horizon, infinite distance away from the brain. But still, you can vary at the same quantity. This time, you will basically integrate from minus C to plus C, use this distance. And again, you get a finite number. And in the ADS4 case, you get this different behavior. The warp vector turns around, runs off to infinity on both sides. So this quantity diverges.
But that's ADS.
That's ADS, yeah. So this quantity diverges. And the asymptotics of your space-time just change. Because here, the asymptotics goes to the horizon of ADS phi space, here at infinity you run into the boundary of the ADS phi space. What we showed in our earlier papers is that even in this situation we still localize a four-dimensional graviton in this local region, and this is so as long as the 4D curvature length turns out to be much, much bigger than the 5D curvature length, which in particular requires a lambda minus lambda curvature smaller. So as long as your four-dimensional cosmological constant is small, which gives you the separation of scales, and the four-dimensional cosmological curvature radius is much, much bigger than the five-dimensional curvature radius, you still get a localized graviton in this kink-like feature on the brain, even so this formal quantity and Planck diverges, which is related to the fact that I did change the asymptotic. So here I have a formally finite volume space-time because of my space-time ends in the horizon, where this warp vector goes to zero. Here my space-time really is bounded by the boundary of ADS space, where the warp vector goes off to plus infinity.
So what's the effective action that governs that photon, that graviton? So I think it should be some 4D effective action governing this local
motion. It's basically just how you feel its action for a massive spin two particle if you just look at it. And the kinetic term is not this integral, but so you can study the modes of these things, and then you'll find that the mathless mode basically is non-normalizable, so this would be the kinetic term of the truly mathless mode, so there's no normalizable truly mathless mode, it's a kinetic term diverges. But there's a mode which has a very small mass, and basically its kinetic term is what you would associate with the four-dimensional Planck scale, which is then the norm of this. If you go to analog quantum mechanics, which Nemanja talked about,
the last one. They translate the linearized Einstein's equations into the form that looks like quantum mechanics, which is normal, just on a simple physical kinetic term of this very light one.
So you have what, massive spin two particles?
Yeah, I have a massive spin. I have a tower of massive spin two particles. Okay, so if you want to know, I can draw this spectrum. So if you go to an analog Schrödinger equation in the flat space, you have this potential that looks like this. I have this volcano, where I have this true zero mode at zero mass, and then I have a continuum of massive convective line mode going all the way down from infinity. When I go to the anti-visible grain, what you get is you get a potential that looks like this. You're running from an infinite wall, finite distance away from infinity. The true zero mode is gone.
Yeah.
But you find a very light mode whose wave function is peaked on the grain as before, whose mass basically goes like lambda squared, where lambda is a four-dimensional cosmological constant. And then I find this tower of massive modes whose mass is of order lambda, say so m squared is lambda squared, and whose wave functions are basically centered away from this, so their wave functions are pressed on the grain and have mostly supported the body.
And the nearly massless part could behave like a graviton?
Yeah, if you look at the propagated, so the easiest way to study the potential between two test particles is to just evaluate the propagated from five-dimensional point of view. And then you find that the force between two test particles on the grain behaves like 1 over r squared.
With small, you call it?
Plus correction. So this guy has a mass, but the mass is basically the distance scales at which the mass becomes important are beyond the curvature radius of the four-dimensional ADS space. So the first thing you see is that gravity breaks down. Newtonian gravity breaks down because you have ADS form before you even see the effects of this mass.
If you say m squared goes like lambda squared in
four-dimensional.
Yes.
So
I said the five-dimensional plan scale to one, so you shouldn't, or the powers that don't.
Okay, the higher masses are at the 5D scale is what you're saying.
The higher masses are set by, this is just a four-dimensional cosmological constant which sets these masses. Up here, you basically have the masses coming down to zero, and here, this is a very small number, these masses are still very, very light. But really, what makes gravity four-dimensional is not that these things are heavier than this guy, but it's this wave function suppression. It's like,
so they're all the same scale.
Yeah, I mean these are
nano. So these all would be continuum state
yeah.
As you take the flat space.
If you take the flat space limit, those guys go over to this continuum of Kaluza Klein mode, and this almost zero mode goes over into the true state.
Okay.
So it's really the mass and the wave. I mean, without the wave function suppression, you wouldn't get total gravity. So you really need these barriers in the center to get the localized product. And that's where this requirement comes from. The little L has to be much, much bigger than capital L. If the 4D curvature radius were not much larger than the 5D curvature radius, you wouldn't have the barriers. You wouldn't get the suppression of the curvature supply with respect to this almost zero.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
So what's wrong with this picture on the right hand, right most side, where lambda is greater than lambda C? As a model of gravity, considering the gravity in the vector space?
I see, so I don't know how to do this in sphinx theory. What I'm going to tell you is that
So
what I'm studying right now is this action, which may well arise in sphinx theory as I'm knowing the effect of action.
But I don't understand. So suppose you have a brain in ADS, and suppose you give more energy to the brain, don't you effectively increase
the
tension?
This brain which I raised here, it's something that only has tension, has no charge, like the ADS So this is not going to be a BPS object. This is something which may well exist in sphinx theory, but we wouldn't have much to say about.
I mean, if Rosen did what he wanted to do, you can do that, but it would have a different equation of state.
So you want something to scale like more.
Are you going to show us how the ADS brain sits in the Poincaré patch?
That's what I'm about to do next. So now there have been some statements that this has something to do with ADS CFT reality. And in order to understand this, you have to see how this brain sits inside the big ADS brain.
Before you do, can I ask, is it allowed to give a small mass to be gone from a sort of billion-dollar bubbles with
Yes, so this, I don't talk to any of the licensees, so I shouldn't be surprised to not get them anymore. I'm just in the very fact, honestly.
But it's not the classical reason of all, but it's not the content issue.
But I, you can't discuss in masses in content.
But I won't describe it in terms of Einstein in protection.
No, it's how you experience it. You can just lie down the action from masses from a topic, like a kinetic term that is not.
And its interactions are pathologic. The free theory is fine.
Yeah, but they become, you can still view it as an effective theory, higher powers as.
If you have the spin 2 tensor, you try to have some negative components.
So, sorry, I didn't.
Oh, sorry.
Can you ask me?
A tensor field with spin 2 has negative non-components, and you need to gauge symmetry to get rid of them, right?
So this is known as a statement from Dunn's, like how discontinuity in the flat spaces wouldn't verify it's not true. Yeah, there has been a British blueprint in Ferrati which shows in ADS space actually 5 is 2. So if you take the masses limit of the propagator of a massive spin 2 particle, you get the same propagator as a massless parameter of the mechanical. The massless limit of the massless. In flat space, you get a discontinuity. The massless limit of the massive propagator is not the massive propagator.
Okay, just ask us this to you, but a light scale is much smaller than the radius of curvature of the four dimensional ADS space. This thing looks effectively massless, very light, and mediates one over our standard. One over our squared gravitational field. And so what's the effective Mises constant?
It's norm of this wave function.
So I know, but that must have some.
Does it have some geometric interpretation as the words of the question?
No, but I mean, it's given in terms of, lambda minus lambda c.
When I draw these wave functions, it is something which we solve numerically.
Right.
So I can give you a number, but
I just want to know how it scales with the dimension pool parameters. It times some dimensionless number that you have to compute numerically.
Yes, it just goes up with this four-dimensional cosmological constant. The four-dimensional cosmological constant I can give you is basically lambda over lambda 50 squared 1 minus this. And then the mass of this guy goes like this squared.
But Newton constant.
That's the mass, but that wasn't what I was asking.
But Newton, in this limit, the Newton constant, well, that seems very close to lambda, then Newton constant just should go.
Yeah, that's what the constant is, the kinetic term.
Yeah, so this effective Planck square goes like L, the wave function of this guy, because
you don't see the
0 mode, and then you get back to L. It's just L, and basically get an M by 2.
So Andreas, I'm sorry, can you repeat the statement? You have a massive spin 2 particle which at short scales looks like only a pure spin 2 exchange, actually. A massless spin 2 exchange. I'm confused. A distance is much less than the curvature. It looks like Newton's law.
Yeah.
Which means there is no scalar component to the interaction.
This is a statement of this Feldman van Damme's account of this continuity. Mm-hmm. In flat space, you take right on the propagator of the massive spin 2 particle, you take the mass to zero, you do not get the massless propagator. Now, in ADS space, what's happening if you take mass to zero at a fixed lambda, then indeed you do get the same answer. This was shown by Ferrati and Cohen and others. And then you might want to drive it.
a contradiction by basically saying take the mass to zero and take the cosine of the constant to zero, what do I get? Then, so then, here I would say I do get the massive propagator, and upstairs I would say I don't get the massive propagator. Then the answer is that basically as m squared goes to zero, as m squared goes like lambda squared, you get the massive propagator. And if m squared goes to zero slower, like lambda, you get the massive propagator in flat space.
It's just an order of limits problem.
So this is basically precisely what the strains that I was doing for you. It's giving you one mode whose mass vanishes like the cosmological constant scale, whose propagation smoothly goes over into the Mathis propagating flat space. And it gives you a bunch of heavy modes whose mass goes to zero, but it goes to zero, so it's saturated and you end up getting the massive propagation. And then there's, I mean, the reason why this works is that in our setup we still have gauge invariance. Basically, we have this unrolled linear mechanism where you say, X, the mu runs from 1 to 4, you get the gauge transformation. Those guys for the x mu plus psi mu, which is a function of the x mu only. We still have this is a gauge invariance, which becomes a gauge invariance of the spin 2 particle. Obviously, a single massive spin 2 particle can't have any gauge invariance. So how is this consistent with getting this into the master? If you analyze how this thing acts on the modes, if you have a true zero mode, this gauge invariance only acts on the zero mode. So in the Minkowski case, this would be the ordinary problem of the gauge invariance acting on the massless spin 2 particle. Whereas if you have this tower of massive modes, what you find is that this gauge invariance mixes the whole tower of massive modes. It doesn't act on any single mode. But if you want to write down the gauge invariance action, you really have to write down an action which includes an infinite tower of modes, and then this gauge invariance mixes all of them. But this is not unheard of. This basically happens in ordinary Kaluza-Klein complexifications. In ordinary Kaluza-Klein complexifications, you have two gauge invariances. One acts on the zero mode alone, which is like you would get in Minkowski lenses. And the other gauge invariance, basically, if you take gauge parameters, which go like a sine of this internal circle, too precise, they can't be expressed as a consistent gauge transformation on the single mode. They mix all the massive modes.
Okay, so then are you saying that it is still consistent to assume that that the nearly massless graviton decouples with the rest of the excitation? And if the gauge transformation mixes those modes, is it consistent to just look at the nearly zero mode and then say that we have localized graviton?
So I can start with full propagator and find that it behaves almost like a Minkowski. So all these heavy modes together is almost zero mode conspire to give me a propagator which looks like the fourth propagator. And one way you can see this from this picture, you should expect something like this, is that on the brain, so on the brain basically higher modes are amplitude suppressed. You shouldn't be surprised that they function and they don't contribute much to the propagator. Also if you look at these gauge transformations, they mostly transform the zero mode into itself. If you want to see how much a given mode transforms with this thing, you have to evaluate the overlap integral of basically constant with various wave functions. And you find that the almost zero mode has a really big overlap, whereas all the heavy guys have almost no overlap with the gauge transformation. So it's really the almost zero mode almost transforms only under the gauge transformation. And the other things only a little bit. And the small number which you have is always this ratio, little L to capital L. So all these statements about almost getting floating gravity, fairly mostly acting on the almost zero mode, always rely on having a floating cosmological constant, which is almost zero. So with the term on substantial floating of the cosmological constant, there's nothing that means anything like floating gravity.
Is this statement true for vector fields also?
The discontinuity? So it's also true for vector fields, but in vector fields it doesn't show up in the propagator, it only shows up in the unique diagram. There has been a paper by Duff where he's basically pointing out that if you look at the single masses spin 2 particle and the loop diagrams and this continuity comes back in ADS vector, then we would be saying that this doesn't apply to our situation because we have to be out of so once you do loops, you really have to take into account all of the hundreds that you see. But this is really not what I want you to talk about. So what I really want you to talk about is that it has something to do with ABS EFT and this makes me. And to see this, we want to see the embedding. So let me just plot the distinct and anti-distinct case. First, the global coordinates. So this is my ABS. Then if you look what the distinct brain is doing, the it's basically sitting on this hyperbloid. So you have this contracting and re-expanding brain, and what Mandelman Sandman basically, what is alluding over here is, it instructs me to throw away the exterior of the hyperbloid and keep the interior of the hyperbloid, and then take two copies of this. So this is dissolution transposition. This is precisely what dissolution is doing. Now what does this have to do with ADS-CFT? Let me just draw a cross-section of the thing. So at a given time, you get a picture that looks like this. I have this big ADS spike, then you have this boundary, so this whole thing is times R, which is time. I have this boundary between S3, and I have this brain which itself is a smaller S3. I'm instructed to throw out all the modes that are sitting between the brain and the true boundary. So in some sense, you would be saying, you throw out modes which are sitting in the UV of the conformal field tree, you're only keeping modes which are sitting in the IR of the conformal field tree. This is also something like Nemanja referred to this description. Basically, you would arrive at the conclusion that Van Sandrum should have a dual description in terms of this conformal field theory, which used to live at this boundary, plus some kind of momentum cutoff. And the problematic part about this description is that you don't really know how to implement this cutting off procedure to conformal field theory, because it's not any usual field theory cutoff, but you should think of this as being a new definition of whatever cutoff you want to apply in the field theory.
This is also time-dependent cutoff.
Yeah, okay, this would also be time-dependent. And if you do the same in Minkowski thing, and draw the Poincaré patch, and then you have a brain doing something like this, and it's basically the same story. You keep the part that's between brain and horizon, and you throw out this structure out. And now I get a cutoff which is time-dependent. Again, I would say the same words. The degrees of freedom which you got rid of are separated from the degrees of freedom which you keep by saying that they have to the UV of a given scale, and the degrees of freedom which you keep are to the IR of a given scale. So you would think this as a conformal field theory rule in terms of a conformal field theory is a cutoff. Alright. Now I want to say that the ADS plane is much better we have. That's a much nicer CFT rule. You can actually explicitly write down the advantage for. And to see this, we can again, we should draw this embedding diagram. Just let me draw the global coordinates. What's happening is that this ADS plane is static. So this is basically the world volume of the ADS4 plane inside the ADS5. And again, if you draw this cross section, now it's not time dependent, it's really a static guy, and it's stretching from the center of the S3 to the center of the S3. This is game times R, which is time. The degrees of freedom which you get rid of are the degrees of freedom to do the writing. If you want to see the Poincaré picture of what's happening, so if this is a boundary and this is a horizon, the brain is sitting like this. And out, so if you draw out, this goes out, stays in. This picture will come back later.
Oh, sorry, what?
Yeah, that's the Poincaré patch version of this picture.
Which is, where is the time driven? Which is the time?
Time. Okay. This is a rise and this is a boundary. This is a static.
It's not the causal
diagram. This is not a causal diagram.
This is Z versus S.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm just. This is basically what you really would call this is R and this
for
is
R versus X, sorry.
It's one of the
okay. One of them.
This is the Minkowski directions and this is the negative direction. And then this is how the band is like. Basically tried by R being some constant of X. Then you continue.
So you said that this is a form of history with boundary, but boundary is constructed such that as you go to infrared degree of freedom, you can penetrate a little bit.
Let's talk about this picture, and then, so what this picture tells is that there are a few things which you should observe. First of all, there's still half of the true boundary left. So what I did before in these pictures is really this time, the part of space which you cut out included the true boundary of space-time. So you got rid of all the original CFT. So what you do here is you keep half of your original CFT. Instead of having the CFT on the 3 sphere, now I have the CFT on the 3 hemisphere and half of the 3 sphere.
Is it necessarily half?
Yeah, so you could just look at what this brain is doing, it's always cutting it right across.
Oh, you can never have something that's cutting a smaller piece?
No, so basically, if you change the tension, what's happening, this brain is even moving.
It just changes
the... It's moving out, so it's changes of how much of the space time you're keeping, how much you're cutting out. But it's always half of the
system. But it's all supposed to be encoded in the same segment of boundary. Is there actually going to be a whole lot of boundaries in the dual?
The same?
I mean, in other words, you're keeping the same segment of the boundary.
Yeah,
you're saying different. That depending on how you tune the tensions,
it's always the same segment of the body.
The same thing about right. Is going to be able to encode that whole fraction of the space, even as that fraction changes.
Yeah.
Boundary conditions change.
The boundary
conditions. Conditions
on the flex.
Will encode everything about that slice. That
you right. Hmm.
Is this a word?
Yes.
So the first thing you should notice is you should still have. Whatever holographic description you want to impose still should have the component field scene on the hemisphere, plus some other stuff. And the other stuff, certainly, naively, you would think to include by this brain itself. So we do have some degrees of freedom which are living on this brain. So you would expect a holographic rule which has the CFT or an S3 or C2, and then has some field theory, something living on the ADS4 plane. But now you appeal to holography again, basically stating that gravity or any theory in ADS should have a holographic tune. It's just saying that we don't know how to define S matrix in ADS. Instead of defining S matrix, we should define correlators on the boundary. So whatever.
But that's the analog of the S matrix.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So instead of defining anything on this plane, you might define just some correlated functions living out in this boundary. So what you're left with is basically having a conformal field theory on half the sphere with particular boundary conditions. So this boundary is basically S2, which is the equator of the sphere. I took my S3, I cut it in half, and now I have to impose boundary conditions on this S2, which is the boundary part of the S3. So there's one more thing which you could worry about, is basically that what you're left with is the original conformal field theory plus some other stuff that breaks conformal invariance. That basically by integrating out these degrees of freedom, what you did is impose the spatial cutoff and in addition removed some of the degrees of freedom. But there's one easy way to see that this doesn't happen, this is just staring at the symmetry. Basically what Harvey showed is that if you take a conformal field theory on a four-dimensional spacetime and ask for which subgroup of the conformal field theory leads a given boundary invariant, and then you find that this is SO3,2. So by breaking down the SO3,2, we already completely, the only thing which we accounted for putting the boundary there already breaks my symmetry to SO3,2, which is the isometry of the spacetime. So if you were to impose any additional UV cutoffs or anything on your field theory, you would certainly break the symmetry further and would not have no chance to describe this gravity setup. So the dual field theory description of this leftover spacetime should just be one copy of the conformal field theory. The original conformal field theory, whatever conformal field theory described the original ADS5, you still have the same conformal field theory, the same Lagrange. All you're doing is you're studying it on half the S3 instead of all of the S3. And if you take the full random sample of the S3, and if I take two copies of this, then what you're left with is one conformal field theory on the S3, another on the one hemisphere, another conformal field theory on another hemisphere, which talk to each other only across the
country. Sorry, I lost that. You don't have to specify a boundary condition?
Right. So you do have to specify boundary conditions. I have a conformal field theory on the hemisphere, and I have particular conformal invariance preserving boundary conditions on the boundary of the hemisphere.
But is there one, aren't there might be several others.
There might be several others. So far, I'm still discussing the Ramsey-Sundin point model. So I don't know what the CFT is, it's doing with pure gravity. But whatever, if I knew what it were, then I would put it on the hemisphere, then I would have one parameter family of boundary conditions which corresponds to tuning attention.
I guess what you're saying is that this theory, the boundary theory, is a renormalized local field theory with boundary, as opposed to theory with ultraviolet, explicit ultraviolet cutoff, which is, strictly speaking, not local.
Yeah, it's a conformal field theory, I'm saying.
Because, no, so in other cases, where on the left side, for example, for in Minkowski space case, you have explicit cutoff, so theory is not strictly speaking in local.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, the Kali analysis already showed that local field theory has the full symmetry.
Yeah. So instead of imposing momentum cutoff, I impose a spatial cutoff, so it's basically different.
spatial cutoff, I can easily deal with because it's something we know how to do in the Lagrangian levels. You can calculate per day functions, you can pass in this.
There's another view. Well, I'm trying to reconcile this with how I look at the Randall syndrome with the flat case. And there you have, think about the 4D effective theory as seen by an observer on the brain. And there you would describe that as being, you know, the gravitational terms, whether whatever physics is on the brain. And then the effective theory representing all the bulk stuff is just a flat space conformal field theory. That lives on the brain with some cutoff, which is set by the ADS scale. And so you should be able to say the same thing here.
Is that just maybe trying to describe the whole setup in terms of something that lives on the brain?
Yeah, in terms of an effective theory on the lower so ADS.
It's a dual description. It's really just a conforming field theory. The dual doesn't involve any gravity. So it's really, so you might try to do some intermediate stuff, which again, I wouldn't know how to formulate, which would be what you're, but what you're just trying to do is represent some of the bulk by some conformal field theory living on the brain.
No, well, I'm just saying, I'm asking what is the effective field theory seen by an ADS? Or as seen by an observer who lives on the brain.
I don't know. It should be very similar to
low energy effective field theory.
If you're only probing distances which are smaller than the ADS4 curvature radius, you can't see the difference between the ADS4 band and the Minkowski 4 band. You should encounter similar physics.
Well,
but it's not the dual.
You could even go to shorter distance scales because.
Yeah, sure. Longer. Longer. You should go to longer than.
Well, the relevant thing should, the relevant cutoff should be the, I think, the five-dimensional ADS radius. That's what is the relevant cutoff scale in the Minkowski case.
It's a four-dimensional ADS curvature radius. It basically tells you there's a difference between the ADS 4 band and the Minkowski 4 band.
Right.
So as long as you probe distances which are shorter than that, you would recover exactly.
Okay, but let's go beyond that. Let's go to longer distance.
Yeah. And then I maybe distance. So if you go to normal distances, then you no longer really have gravity on this frame. Then you have this complicated tower of masses spin two excitation, which all contribute. And there should be somehow coupled to some conformal.
Some other theory that's complicated.
So there might be some dual description only living on the ADS frame, but that's going to be more complicated and certainly not better behaved than the Minkowski case.
Okay.
What I'm proposing is that you have two descriptions of the setup. One is only gravity, which has 5D gravity modes in the bulk, 4D gravity modes localized on the brain. It's dual to a CFT, which doesn't have any gravity, which is living on this hemisphere at infinity with some particular boundary degrees of freedom on the boundary of the hemisphere. There is a localized graviton on the brain coupled to the stress energy tensor on the boundary. The 5D graviton in the bulk coupled to the stress energy tensor on the basically the bulk of the CFT, and if you have some other fields which are living on the brain, they would correspond to put additional boundary degrees of freedom on the boundary.
Can you back up any of these words with computations of correlates?
So, yeah.
Correlates,
no.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask that,
because
suppose you start with the brain in this position, and you send in a wave, and it bounces off. So from the boundary back to the boundary. How would it see the difference between that and changing the tension and moving the brain a little bit over? Since you said you didn't change anything about.
You want to bounce something?
No, not from there, from the generic part of the boundary.
From the generic part, yeah, from here, say.
From there, say, off the brain, back out. It'll be different if the brain is.
Yeah, but what you're doing is you send something to the boundary and wait for it to come back and just say you probe what particular boundary conditions you put on it.
Yeah, but you haven't seen the boundary conditions at all. It's the same.
It does. Well, the CFT, it goes here and comes back here. So it does probe the boundary of the CFT. The process you're describing in the conformal field theory corresponds to sending something off to the boundary of your boundary intention, which is what you see here in the customer. So the reflex of the boundary is certainly sensitive to the boundary. In some sense, I back this up by the correlated computations because I reproduce four dimensional Newton's property. So this way I see that the boundary stress.
You didn't need all the words to do that.
No, but I need all these words if I want to go to string theory and if you should discuss any
string theory. String theory requires a lot of words.
I think we have string theory constants just because there's a conformal field theory with boundaries.
Okay, so this will be the starting point for string theory construction.
What is the group preserving? What is the subgroup of SO4,2 preserving those operations?
SO3,2 is a subgroup of SO4,2 that preserves a given boundary.
Not SO3,1, SO3,2.
SO3,2 is because it has lower dimension.
If you make a contraction of this SO3,2, you can get the Poincaré group. right? Which is the symmetry unbroken by an explicit ultraviolet cutoff in the momentum space in the case of the flat brain, right?
Yeah.
So can you make a limit of this construction with the ABS brain that gives you the flat
brain? Okay, take my attention to criticality. Do locally my brain looks like a flat brain, but the global embedding of this brain certainly changes as you go from
So arbitrary element of S sol say 2 can be extended to the full space. Arbitrary element of conformal group on S sol, the isometry of the smaller piece.
Yes, yeah, so this is a subgroup of the conformal of the four-dimensional conformal group that needs a different boundary invariant. So the formulated conformal piece in the upper half plane, all the conformal transformations achieve the real line unchanged beside from S.
Real line is here S 2.
Yes, is it not? When I'm okay, when I'm talking about the
is it S2 or S2 cross R?
Yeah. It's like embedding lower dimensional hyperboloid into higher dimensional hyperboloid, right?
Okay.
So the symmetry decreases by one dimension.
So this is how the Poincaré patch looks like. Yes, then it's easier to talk about things. You look at the Poincaré patch of this theory, I have a CFT in the upper half plane, I have a CFT in the lower half plane. They have a co-dimension one defect that separates the two CFTs. And SO32 is precisely the subgroup of SO42 that leaves this given boundary untouched. Then in addition, of course, you can put a 3D CFT, so this is a 4D CFT. You can put a 3D CFT explicitly on the boundary, which will not destroy your symmetry any further. It's basically, you need to do this if you want to get a localized line. Without putting the explicit CFT there, you don't get parts of it. You wouldn't expect that there are any stress energy tensor stresses with energy behavior. So the difference between getting localized gravity and not getting a localized gravity is whether you explicitly have a three-dimensional CFT giving you the boundary. So now I want to talk about spin series. So far, it was just four-point introduction. It's pretty much on the transition. I don't have a word to react to stop me. So the idea would be that in spin series, it's very easy to get things like this. This we know how to do. And then basically, claims once I find this conformal field series, I automatically got the setup of localized gravity. So what do you need? You take your favorite conformal field series, say it's called an N3 brain, giving you an SUN, keeping under the Engels form. Because we're all very familiar with this, so this is now, this is the Engels force super under, this is my conformal field series in the upper half plane. Take any response to them, it's conformal field series in the lower half plane. I even allow myself to have different gauge groups on both sides. This could be SEN, this could be SEN minus Q. Now I want to introduce this defect in the middle, and I want to do this in a supersymmetric fashion so that I have some control. And spin series tells me how I can do this. I basically can put a 5-plane in here. And there's a PQ set of different 5-planes that you could put in here, which all reserve 8 supercharges. And for simplicity, we are going to take the D5-plane because some of the calculations which I will do later, I don't know how to do it.
So this
would be
rotated its press of dimensions. It's rotated partially into the black hole.
Yeah. The Smith band would be 0, 1, 2, 6, just because this is how an army that can put the Smith band. It would be 5 and 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so this is basically a Hanami with the setup. It's very easy to, I mean, if you go now we want to go to this coupling unit alpha prime goes to zero. And then the field theory that's describing the setup is going to be in SUN super-young units on these N equals 4 SUN super-young units on the DC planes. And you have this co-dimension 1 defect, which is represented by the D5 plane. Then I can basically take N minus 2 here and can take N over there. Take M of the D5 plane. So I get a family of setups which is described by three integers, Q, M, and N. And this is certainly, so the field theory, what the open string sees in the setup is this, a conformal field theory which looks like this. It's a conformal field theory in the upper half plane, different conformal field theory in the lower half plane. They only talk to each other by a co-dimension one defect which is separating them.
The theory on the defect conformal? How do you know the theory on the defect conformal?
How do I know that this is a The three-dimensional theory is conformed. So in this case, if I have just a single D5 plane, there wouldn't be any degree of freedom there.
Okay. But if you have
any D5 planes, then you know what you get. You basically get
So then you can start out having it slightly separated. Let me call them an S-band for just because one point of discussion by S-band to get the same components. And this thing here would be a three-dimensional 3D U n to the n minus 1 gives you. And then I have the entrance for superiors out here. I have the entrance for superiors.
U n to the n minus.
Yeah, U n to the n minus.
With bifundamentals. Fundamentals.
Right, and then if you basically know that this guy at the origin of its modelized space has a conformity to a strong coupling, which basically means if you now collide on the 5-band, I get a conformity, a three-dimensional conformity to sitting there, which has precisely, I mean, this, the infrared fit point of this gauge group is a three-dimensional conformity to which is sitting on the boundary. Basically, whatever the boundary conditions are, as you if they are not conforming very to begin with, you just apply RG flow. Then you either end up with having no degrees of freedom whatsoever, or you end up with the active conforming. So it's certainly going to preserve conforming variance in the end.
And how about the degree of freedom purely in the D5 direction?
So they go away. So the six-dimensional degrees of freedom go away in the decoupling, just because the six-dimensional Young-Yu coupling is an S squared. Times GS, so they decouple. The only reason we can make a four dimensional ones, that's what every single thing is.
Do you have some digital brains ending on the D5 brain? I don't know if they can bring over.
Basically, if I have this n minus cube, what's really happening is that I have n minus cube going all the way through, and the other two brains will be one over R bending into something like this. So this is how the picture really looks like. I introduce this cube around.
So how do you see that this gives the kind of gravitational action that you started out with?
So no, this really is different. This
is
different. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, like so far I realized
that you have shifted your ADS dual picture.
Okay.
So you should get that if you take some interim.
Right, geometric resolution, you get ADS and ADS.
Yeah, so this is what I need to. It's still a part of my job to go. So what I was showing you so far is that from pure gravity, you can motivate in ADS 4 and in ADS 5 as a dual description in terms of conformal fields in many ways. What I showed you now is it's very easy to get a string theory conformal fields in many ways. So now the next claim is the neuronic geometry of this looks like ADS 4 and ADS 5 and does not look square. As least as you take n very large, this is something you should already learn from this discussion. In order to get really a 3D CFT living on the boundary, I want to have lots of 5-bands. So we do this in two steps. The first one is where I can actually do living on the super of calculation. We're going to do a probe approximation. That is, we look at the AS5 times S5 geometry that's set up by these three grains. So let's first start with Q into 0. You look at the near horizon geometry that's set up by the N, these three brains, and they want to see how the D5 brain embedded inside this AS5
times S5. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know the scheme that you don't end up with an effectively infinite conformal field theory, bulk conformal field theory, so the boundary goes away. You know that it's really a conformal field theory boundary. Mm. I mean, you know that that's the right way the thing scales.
Boundary can be
infinity. Yeah, that's the question. You know, it's clear. You know, sort of away from the conformal points, you have some way that this n equals 4 superangle set up ends somewhere. But in the scaling limits, it's conceivable that.
Couldn't you focus on the boundary as you took the scaling limit down?
You can sit near the boundary.
But then this area is not close to the boundary.
Is the right half of space-time decoupling from the left half of space-time?
I guess that's the question.
Oh, yeah. And then basically you see that in the field theory, if I were to put in like one more brain to the very right and one more brain to the very left, this is just a three-dimensional gauge series, and then I have this bifundamental degrees of freedom. So certainly the right half of space-time in the field theory doesn't decouple from the left half of space-time.
Is that part of the
Yes, yeah, so in the field theory, so far I only described the field theory. The field theory
is going to be a working infrared limit, which is very not.
Yeah, but this is like in our non limit setup, we also go to the infrared. But what I'm saying is, put one more grain here, put one more grain here, then I just increase. I got rid of my equals four superangles, and now I have the menu on both sides. Now this setup is just described by three dimensional gauge theory. which has two more UN factors, and certainly there's a couple of the right UN factor and the left UN factor. They do not decouple even the far.
Oh, I see.
It's just if now this is UN and plus one two-dimensional case, you if have any excitation, this very right most group
factor, that's not that sounds good. That sounds good.
Yeah, so if you, well, yeah, that's the argument that for power invariance, that is exactly what we have.
So now I want to do a slope calculation. I want to show that this defined plane, so what I want to show is basically the defined plane inside radius 5 times x5 wraps is on wraps, let's say, wraps radius 4 times x2. So you basically be the first evidence of an effective five-dimensional picture and delete this 5 then becomes this co-dimensional one void which is wrapping in radius 4 inside radius 5.
See, why is the, the fact that it's an S2?
Why is it, yeah. So it's an extension because of him. Because you have an ADS project. I do get a tachyonic mode, but it's not tachyonic enough to wire it. So there's nothing escaped like this S2. The S2 wants to unwrap as a negative mass mode, which has, would have this.
We're pinched down to a point on the far
side. Right. So if you describe the scalar, which is basically the angular position of this. As to you find it has negative mass, it's sitting on the top of the potential. It's going to be a tachyonic mode in the effective five dimensional picture, but four dimensional series, which is on the rest of the world, but it's not tachyonic enough to see
that it's so you say sitting at the top, that means that there's no gradient, that the gradient vanishes.
Yeah, but its mass is negative, so the gradient.
Yeah, I know that, but why does the gradient vanish? Why can't
it's you? It's maximum,
know?
Right? If it's sitting on the same.
But the S2 is the equivalent.
The S2 is equivalent. This guy is sitting the S2. Let me go on. So this is what I'm going to show. This S2 is equivalent to S5, so it's sitting at the maximum of the action.
Can you say something about so when you wrap an S2 and S5, you break the SO6 in this way? Yeah. Is that obvious from the brain configuration?
I break the SO3 and SO3 because it's focused on the brain configuration. Basically, there's my brain computer. I have an SO6, which was basically 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9 rotations. And then with an SO3, which has a 3, 4, 5 rotations, I get. Is an SOC which has 7 and 9 because basically what we did is we took the 4-dimensional R symmetry of the N plus 4 symmetry in 4 dimensions and broke it to the 3-dimensional R symmetry of N to 8 and 3-dimensional. Sorry, 8 plus 4 and 3-dimensional. 8 plus 4 and 3-dimensional. Alright, so there's one more easy way to see this and then we'll do a more complicated way which is doing this DDI action which we do the same side. So let me first describe the easy way. The easy way is just to go to another Siemens paper and see how the ADS5 actually arises out of the two when you arise in chance. So you don't get any odd ADS5 out of if you take this real method and take the scaling limit which puts you into the new horizon, you get the ADS5 in one very particular coordinate system, which is this one. And you have even space-time identification. So these x1, x2, x6 are just this is like Poincaré vector coordinates and the Minkowski four part of your metric are just these 1, 2, and 6 directly the space-time coordinates. In addition, this V sphere basically is in regular directions so based on the speed length. And in addition, the S5 is just given by the equation E squared and this A squared.
The signature is to come up 3 years.
Yeah, the signature. So it's, I have this signature in the rest of the so not, yeah. So we won't be negative.
Mostly negative.
Minus. Yeah. Everything gets to the plus. This looks better. Yeah. You know that I defined five sphere metric is only my design. So now the next step is to just view. So we know how the five fields embedded in the asymptotic coordinates, we can just translate this into this coordinate system. Namely the five things defined by the equation x6 being x7 being x8 being x9 being 0. And then you just look at what this guy is doing, 7, 8, 9 being 0 basically tends to the system. S2 inside S5 which has the same radius. So it's one of the equatorial S2s. And x62 0, if you go back to this coordinate system, x62 0 does not have this factor of the radius 5 metric. You're left with an radius 4, which has the same curvature radius as the radius 5. That was one of its new counts, the directions along the slice. So you immediately see that the 5 turning 3 right belong to. It's an radius 4 times S2. And the radius of this guy is the same as the 5 turning 2 point. The radius of this guy is about the same as 5 turning 2 point.
Can you do a similar thing with the 7 brain on S4?
So then it wouldn't be supersymmetric, right? If you had tried to have discrete brains only in 7 brains, you need some non-supersymmetric stuff. So you can do the same, you can do black strings anywhere on D3, so you can have M2 brains anywhere on 5, and you're always getting the same. So if you M2 on M5, you get the M5 on AD3 times S3. If you have a black string on D3, you get AD2 times S2.
Part of what these guys seem to be arguing is that you don't. Part of what these guys seem to be arguing in their new work is that you don't need supersymmetry for stability.
That means in many examples.
What's that?
That means in many examples.
Right. Maybe not. Maybe it's more here than.
Certainly, you could try to extend this to non-supersymmetric setups. I just like the supersymmetric one because then I don't have to worry about the meaning. I can hope that things continue to hold and you have some protection.
So previously, when I asked the question about the Victor case, you made a point that you are considering brain without charge. But here, in this example, you have ADS2 brain, which is actually D brain inside of ADS2.
Yeah, but the point is it doesn't carry three brain charge.
Oh.
It does carry, so let me just go on to basically make Q non-zero. By making Q non-zero, you force the 5 plane to have 3 plane function. Now, if you make Q non-zero, you have some of my 3 planes. And now, what the effective picture looks like is I have these 3 planes coming in here, I have n of them coming in, only n minus 2 of them come out. What this means, I turned on Q units of world volume flux on the defined plane.
So N over Q is roughly the controlling the shape of the brain.
N over Q?
Yeah, so the brain can be bent.
What's happening here is that now the brain bends, so now instead of getting this equation x6 being 0, we get an equation that x6 being some constant over D. Mm-hmm. So that's basically now taking into account that I have Q brains anymore. And you can think that this constant should basically go like Q. Then you can basically show that it goes like Q over root G and G.
So this gives you a foliation of ADS5 by sub-ADS.
So what this does for you is if you can. So here basically my picture before, I had this AD4 which is sitting on this straight line, which is the same, basically saying this AD4 has the same curvature as the AD5. If you turn on non-zero Q, you get this picture. Then your AD4 is bending out in the bind, in the amount by which it bends. The Q makes it bend out, makes it flatter and flatter. And the AD4 curvature radius over here is now given by capital L squared times N plus. So if you make Q very large, you make C very large. And one thing that's important to note is really that it's Q which makes my AD4 large, not PSQ. Later we will see things that depend on PS times Q. And if the back reaction is basically controlled by PS times Q. So it's just Q. You can work a PS3 0, which we later see is equivalent to saying the probe analysis is actually 5. And still get a very large AD4. So making Q large, you get a flat AD4 already in the problem without including bracket Q.
Q large means you're approaching to the boundary?
Yeah, so as I make Q large, this guy approaches further and further as well. Right? If this would go to infinity, I would reach the critical value where I get a flat. So if I were to take Q to infinity, I would get an infinite AD4 curvature rates. Of course, Q can't be infinity. Q can at most be n, because Q is defined by how many of my n brains n. So if I have n brains coming in, I can have at most n of the n brains n.
In this case, all constraint metrics and cross-string metrics are the same?
There are two terms on this. So for the five-frame field, there's a vertical in constant, and the five-frame doesn't seem to say open screen. The six-dimension modes would seem. And this, so there's a very well field turn on along the S2, but there's no very well field turn on along four dimensional at least for that. So when the N is more, I'm thinking open to the dimension. So let me say something else. So this was the easy way to see that we can get these four times as two. Now the hard way to see the same, to basically fix the factors of 2 pi in this dimension and see both by 2, is to do the Born-Winkler calculation. So you know that the Brown action for this 5 is given by something like this, g plus f. And I basically get this addition and basically mean the term where I get integral over the beginning of the 6x, where I get f, which is a very volume field times this 4 form field, which is turned up in the alias 5 times 5. Okay, go on. So if you plug in here an arm size, it's basically the brain is mapping S2 inside the S5, which has an arbitrary angle, so you keep this angle up fixed, and you take an arbitrary function, B being the function of X6. But again, you see the ADS5 times the ADS4 times is 2 popping out of here, and so I don't think I have too much time, so I won't put this little exercise in the blackboard, but this is a straightforward exercise. You have an action, you devise, you create this motion, and you make an answer to the function of x6. And then you find this fact, which I told you before, that basically if you look at the potential, the function of the angle, which describes the embedding of the S2 inside the S5, you get a potential which has basically minimized the S2 would have zero radius and has a maximum of the S2 sitting at the equator, and we find ourselves sitting on top of the circle. The mass of this guy is basically classified by the only freedom mass. That's the value of the second derivative of this potential.
You can evaluate?
The second derivative.
What is it compared to the
It's like half of what it, and the negative mass is half of what the bound is. The value bound is. And then so the ADS4 gets flatter and flatter as you increase Q, but then also this potential gets shallower and shallower. So the mass always stays the same ratio to the bound.
Sorry, but those are supersymmetric.
Right? Yeah, so they preserve the coordinates, they're all quantity.
So how come they have a vacuum? I'm sorry, they are unstable?
They're not unstable, they're bound by them.
But knowing SUSE, you didn't have to use one.
Yeah, but I didn't do a supersymmetric. I didn't take supersymmetry of the quantity. Basically, I only didn't solve the equation of motion. Study supersymmetry variations. Yeah, and so I should say that basically Bacchus and Petrovko study almost the same thing as Q1, Q5 frames ending on the 3 frames, and then we get out Q1 minus Q in both frames, Q5, Q5 frames. But we do these fundamental strings like cosine, everything. So this would be one of these generalizations which I talked about. But you can take any one of the conformal fields in this Malassina one down in this first paper, except for the M5 frame, and then put something where it's conformal field to the N's here, and then you get the same analysis in AES times S frame. The M5 frame just can't end on anything because there's no bigger frame of angle.
So Bacchus, for example, can be considered as the S dual of a given defined system with boundary.
Yeah.
And but in that case, I thought that the open string metric and closed string metrics are different in this SDR picture. So in particular, you don't get flat brain in the limit of cube of infinity. You still have unsymmetrical space with finite radius. So I understand
that's correct. Yeah, I mean,
so you have one
this could happen here to us. You know, in this other example, you can control it because it's a B field, it's not a Ramon field.
Yeah.
So you know the answer.
Yeah, the answer is not the crap.
So the answer is that the brain is as curved as the ADS5 or the ADS3.
The open string metric. I'm only talking about closed string metrics.
Yeah, but my question was that if you are living on the brain, do you feel your space is carved off that?
So it's because he's in this S2 background, and he has his electric field strength turned on, so he has a field strength turned on along the ADS2 here. I have field strength turned on along the S2, which is inside my internal pump. I don't have any field strength turned on along my ADS2. The only thing which I have turned on along my ADS4 is this background C field, which I inherit from living inside an ADS5. I don't, certainly there's something people don't know how to treat. And I'm living on a brain which is living in a non-zero C4 vector. I don't have any of my vertical physics. Let me move on. I see, so I only have one more thing to say, which is basically, because I consider an evidence for the picture burns because
can I ask one more question?
Brains in the token. Yeah.
So I just want to make sure I understand the situation. So at the beginning you said that you have ADS, before you get into the string theory construction, you said that you're going to have ADS 5, and then you put ADS 4 brain in it and remove half of it. And so you have half of ADS 5. And then you have some other things somewhere else and then you combine them together. But in this construction, is it true that you don't have to actually have a pair of that? We just have one ADS5 and just divide that into two pieces.
I mean, I still get, so these brains basically sit in here precisely like this map, right? I have the left half and then the right half. So far I didn't include any bank reactions. So far I certainly do. The other thing that I described earlier, when some picture like now cutting out the right half, taking the same picture again and pasting it back to
you don't have to do that.
It can certainly be including the back reaction. So far I just start out with one ADS5 and find a grain which is doing this.
Which does N and N minus Q.
Yeah, so yes.
I'm slightly confused about the curvature radius because in the bulk you have the same ADS5, right?
Let me talk about the back reaction.
Oh, okay. So that's it.
So in order to do this, basically, you go to the five-dimensional effective theory by compactifying on the S5. So I get an Einstein-Hilbert term, which goes roughly like S n to the fifth to the S squared R and some factors of the party maybe somewhere. And then I get basically get plus one over ds, which comes from some u5, so the 5-brain tension s goes like one over ds. And then I get basically n times square root of 1 plus n squared. So what this is basically, this is the tension of a 5-brain wrapping S2 of radius. M, the 5-brain wrapping the radius L2, radius L, S2, is Q units of flux turned on. So this is precisely the tension of this 5-brain wrapping the S2 in the effective five-dimensional description. And the reason I have this one over root gn there is basically the volume contributed to the tension just goes like L squared, it does see the radius of the S2, whereas the flux contribution doesn't see the radius of the S2. The flux contribution is independent of how big the S2 is, just basically Q. So this root gn kills the L squared out front. If you want, you can put the L squared inside. It would be an L to the force here, and then there's no L to the force. So, what you basically see, if you want to improve the back reaction of the brain, what's going to happen is that the extrinsic curvature is jumping, and also other fields, like the cosmological constant across the brain, is going to jump. And the jump is basically proportional to Gs times m times 1 plus m plus q squared. So now, first, what we've doing so far, we can now identify as having GSN finite, so I get my finite size ADS5. But we then basically go with GSN and GSN 0 to 0. So I work with zero screen copying, and I aim big enough so that even zero screen copying might distribute it after significant bank reaction on the brain. But Q and M are some finite numbers, so that basically bank reaction of them can be totally neglected. So it was justified to basically not perturbing my ADS5 at all. So now we want to talk about what's happening if I make any one of those two finite. There are two cases which are interesting to consider. One of them is basically, which is the one which I want to discuss first, is make keeping this guy zero and making this one finite. In some sense, you might think this is an interesting case because you have this Q sitting there, and before I showed you, Q gives you a very net ADS form. So by considering this case, I'm guaranteed to start out already the probe, even if it's a very net ADS form. But what we'll see is actually that the other one that localizes very too fast. Want to highlight from the end, so we start with the PSQ case first and see why it doesn't work with this kind of thing. The whole point where most of this discussion I was going to head is that this is a continuous parameter, so I can turn it on smoothly, so I should basically smoothly connect to the pure ADS5 situation. So when I start out here, is I have pure ADS5, and the form factor of pure ADS5 is this. This is again A of R plotted as a function of R. And I assume that I did this ADS4 slicing. So if you just take pure ADS5, write it as an ADS4 slicing, your form factor is basically log of Cauchy, which is what I just plotted for you. Going out linear in the end, and has this turnaround point in the center. What you did by making Q large, you basically achieved that your brain is sitting out here at a large warp vector. So now if you smoothly, so this warp vector, I should say, is a log of Kirchhoff, basically R over L minus some constant B. And this constant B basically precisely gives me how far away does the brain, so this is Kirchhoff B.
Is B related to C in your previous notation?
Yeah, so in my previous notation, this was a C over L.
Okay.
Too lazy to write it over L, so I thought if you want to write this as a left warp factor and a right warp factor, both of them start always having the same B, and B has the same sign, the turnaround point is in the same side of the brain. So
the behavior of A is left or right over the
So this is A is, I mean, there's no bank reaction of the brain whatsoever. This is pure ADS5 that has grown like this. And basically I want to put the brain at R to zero, that's why I'm on the Z there. Clearly this is just for the geometry this doesn't matter, but if I say my brain is at R to zero, then this gives me basically where the turnaround is. The turnaround is not allowed out of the scene. So if I now turn on the bank reaction, what's going to happen is that the left and the right warp factor slightly separate. So you get a picture which basically looks like this. Make this more extreme. So the total warp factor is this. Coming is my original left warp factor. So this distance here is what I call now B left. This distance here is what I call B right. We saw that both B left and B right is nicely separated from what B was before. So I end up with a warp vector which we refer to up. That is precisely this local feature close to the brain. You have this finite tension brain, so the brain is doing this a kick in my warp vector. So it kicks from coming up to going up with a smaller slope. And this is basically, as I said before, this is just a consequence of this being a small parameter. If you want to have the other situation where you get a warp factor that basically would be like this, if you have up, down, then I have a turnaround point to the left, I have a turnaround point on the right, which means that B really has to change by a lot. I arranged B to be a large parameter to begin with by putting my brain into a big warp factor. So I want B to move across the brain to change sign, I would have to get a really huge back vector. I have B left here and B right move all the way to the other side of the brain.
Can you do that while keeping Q to be less than M?
So what I want this argument right now is that basically if you turn on a small back reaction, you'll always get this up situation, not the up-down situation. So
So you might think that perhaps a very large bakery actually would get something like this, but certainly then it's harder to control, and then people give you some arguments about even large bakery actually would expect that just turning on these two, all these stuff is this up wall factor. Just one remark about this up wall factor. If you look at the volcano potential, it comes to something like this, it looks like this. If I just in the Minkowski case, this is volcanic potential you get. Which means you do get a very light mode, which is sitting in here, but you have only 5 modes which are not separated by any barrier from your 40 mode. So up does have a localized 40 mode, but it doesn't give rise to 40 Newton's mode. It has all these 5 dimensional modes which screw up 4 dimensional. So up isn't good in the sense that it gives light, should give rise to localized gravity. Up it does have 40 modes, but they don't give 40 correlates. So this should correspond to having no 3D CFT on the dual, which is to be expected, because I remember what I said earlier, you need many 5 frames to get a 3D CFT. Right now, just have a single 5 frame sitting here. I didn't put a 3D CFT on the boundary. So if I have my 40 CFT, which has boundary conditions which are imposed by a single 5 frame and this number Q, which tells me how many frames in, but I didn't put a 3D CFT on the boundary. If you look at the near horizon picture of this, basically, I drew this picture before. In the Pongrad main patch, you have this basically, you have the SUN minus Q sitting down here. And you have the cross the plane, I have the SUN sitting up here. This is if I draw the Pongrad main patch version of this picture. And this is what I drew earlier, I have the boundary of ADS here, I have the horizon down here. If you look over here, this just looks like going from the Higgs branch of the SUN. SUN minus Q, SUN. So there we go, because we can write down the multi-centered distributed metric. If you have large X6, we can write down the metric for this. It's just a multi-centered distributed metric, and there we know the up walk vector, not the down walk vector.
So I forgot the condition. Could you remind me what are the conditions for conformal invariance on the boundary condition? You say that this setup does not satisfy?
No, what I'm saying is that this setup doesn't localize gravity. Yeah. I do get a four-dimensional conformal feature, which has a three-dimensional boundary, which preserves conformal invariance, yes. But I did not put a conformal three-dimensional conformal feature, dynamical three-dimensional conformal feature, which is large central charge on the three-dimensional boundary. So I do get a dual gravity setup, which has 5D fluctuations, but doesn't have any four-dimensional. Only has 5D fluctuations, which give rise to TT correlators with 1 over a distance to the 8th behavior, but no TT correlators with 1 over a distance to the 6th behavior.
But how can you know why you need to stack the conformal features on the boundary? I mean, I understand you need something on the boundary to be able to describe what's going on the frame, but ordinary ADS CFT works also if you do relative perturbations and so on.
Yeah, I'm more worried about it's not the conformal expressive, but it's having some three-dimensional series versus a four-dimensional series. Localized gravity will correspond having explicit dynamics of three-dimensional series. Okay, if this was too confusing, then now we should break up, because now we do the case of plus localized gravity. By going to the other situation, we stay at Q equals 0 and we turn on GSM. Basically what's happening now is because I have two Q equals 0, I get this Q solution. I can send X6 going to minus X6. This is the wall factor that has to be invariant on this. In addition, as I motivated before, this is really a setup in which you do put this good conformance three-dimensional series on the boundaries. Now I have this, my 3D series is un to the n minus 1 dh3, which is the conformal field series which you put in the three-dimensional boundaries. The picture of the two legs is n equals 4 supergrammules. On the upper half plane, n equals 4 supergrammules in the lower half plane. Also, I have gauge to get n now because I said q equals 0. Then I have this 3D gauge series, which is the un to the n minus 1 living on the boundary. Okay, now again, you start out with basically this guy. Now we want to turn on a smooth perturbation, which is C2 symmetric and it's positive tension. Basically, the statement is the only thing which you can use in this. So C2 symmetry tells me that either I have two turnaround points or no turnaround point. Having no turnaround point would be this, which would be negative tension, and we know that our gate is positive tension. And then the only thing which you can do is go a little bit into, which is up, down, which is like this. The only question that remains is basically, can I make this dimple large enough? So the ratio, the height of this dimple is
the four curvature lengths over the five curvature lengths? Can I make this math much bigger than one? And in order to decide this question, I have to, so this is going to be the shape of the gravity solution. In order to solve for this parameter, I have to write down the gravity solution. Don't have here. This is important to any forms to help us.
That's the shape of the potential.
This is the wall factor.
Or the warp factor.
This is the wall factor. Okay.
So this is also similar to the wave, the ground state wave function.
Like yeah, the potential, basically the potential goes like this would be, so these walls go linear. There's the potential really advancing to the wall and finite distance again, and then you would get a potential like this. Mm-hmm. The question is, are these barriers big enough to suppress the fire to bombs or not? So basically, as you increase the 40 L, you grow these barriers higher and higher. So you really need big barriers to suppress fire to bombs. You need a big barrier. So the only field of evidence that this barrier is actually getting big enough, I can give is tell you what the critical tension are and write down once more what our tension was.
I'm confused. So is that the opposite limit that you want to take? I'm confused. I thought that you wanted to take a limit where for the cosmological constant is small.
Right, which means that the length, curvature length is large. This is a small for the cosmological.
Yeah, yeah,
little L is the 4-dimensional and the champion L is the 5-dimensional. I want a very flat 4-dimensional take this problem.
Your brother fields around besides the just the background metric.
Yes, yeah, so now I turn on the filicon and the two form as well.
Yeah, you've got some complicated background, and so you're saying I can still settle that the potential looks like that for the graviton loads in that
so
background.
So I mean, among other things, I still have a metric, and the metric
yes
has to be ADS 5 far away from the drain. It has to be an ADS 4 walking because I preserve conformance with it. It has to have a positive tension kink in this tension, and it has to be C2-symmetric. That's all the tension here. So I'm not claiming the magnetic in this regime. So in this regime, other fields will be turned on. So this is not going to be anything. Before, maybe I had caution till I hit the drain, then I get a C2 kink, and I had caution on the other side of the drain. Now I have something else in here, some complicated geometry. So this will no longer be a caution, this will be some other.
I'm just asking, if you want to look at whether or not you localize gravity, you have to look at the spectrum of the theory. There's some complicated coupled spectrum, isn't there? It doesn't just separate, well, in this background.
So I know if you have the scalar, if you have, so the proportions of the two form and the dilaton effectively become scalars in five dimensions. And the transverse phase is known from five dimensions, satisfy your own equations, which only depends on the four factor profile, doesn't care about the profile of the scalar. So only if you look at the phase component and the polyvalent angle, you do get messy equations. Transverse phases components still get the volcano potential, which only depends on the wall factor. The volcano potential is just like 8 prime square times 9 quarters plus 3 halves, 8 up front. So if you know the wall factor, you know the spectrum.
So can you say again, guys, how would you achieve this limit level of bigger than one?
Let me tell you one more thing. There's a critical value of the tension at which we would, if we just put a brain here which only has tension, don't turn on other things, we would expect there's a critical value of the tension which is basically 1 over L, which goes like G nu times 1 over L, which is basically goes like G n, because G nu itself goes like n to the fifth. And we see that the tension of the five frame of the left to five frame goes like Gn. So what you see is if you make M comparable to N, I indeed get into the vicinity of the tension of this red five frame becomes critical. And then this is precisely the point at which you would expect that it's no longer good to treat a 5 frame back in DS2 as an effective 3 grain inside the ADS5, because now the radius of the throat that the 5 frame sets up itself gets the same radius as the curvature radius of the ADS4.
So you want N minus M to be much lesser, yeah?
So I want Gn to become comparable to Gn in order to get to basically like one third or one half Gn. the manufacturing machine, right, should have, where this analysis still is good, where this tells me that I could go close to criticality, so that I get a very large 80-spawn size, 80-spawn, but I'm still in a machine where I can treat the 5N as an effective speed N.
What are the reasons that M cannot be larger than N?
M can be larger.
Don't you get the blue stuff?
Right, so then, if M gets larger, then, as I said before, this analysis of the 5N rapidly assumes to be effectively 3N size, the AES5, it's no longer applicable. So I know that I don't get an AES, a decision, right, because that research is symmetric. This should be the explanation where I can get close to criticality, but I can't go beyond it.
Because you can't wrap the brain on S5?
What I did here is basically I solved five-dimensional Einstein equations. I pretend that I can consider this five-brain rapidly S2 as an effective three-brain in the five-dimensional gravity theory. But once the throat region of the 5N becomes as big as the curvature radius of the S5 and of the AES5, I'm no longer allowed to truncate down to 5 dimensions. I really have to take into account full 10 degrees long.
And what happens if you do that?
I don't know. So then someone has to write down localized gravity solution for intersecting D-brains, which happened in some cases, but unfortunately not in this case. So by Yasugin and Smith, for example, write down this A5 curves localized solution. People here get some learnings. Unfortunately, no one wrote down localized three ways intersecting the 5. So this is. I would really appreciate if someone writes down this. So let me summarize and then we can. So what I tried to show you today is that AES planes and AES 4 planes and AES 5 are gravity dual for component 3 series with boundary. It's easy to describe supersymmetric stable component 3 series with boundaries and spring series by taking these three brains intersecting the 5 brains. You can show that in the probe limit that the 5 brain actually becomes a brain that's wrapping AES times sphere inside the AES times sphere geometry set up by the three brains. And in approximate scaling limit, if you turn on the back reaction, the setup will localize gravity for the AES concept. Thanks.
Any further questions?
Tony, do you have a host of predictions for what the solution should look like in the sense that you told us you know the three-dimensional field theory? So you presumably know some big tower of projective representations of supersymmetry. And so you can tell us what the KK mode localized on the AES core should be.
Yeah. And so you know the Coyote findings of the theory, then you can certainly decouple the dynamic.
So as soon as somebody writes down the solution, you'll be able to check immediately the number of predictions.
Well, whatever you did in the AES 5 case, you can check here, so you have to still be fair amount of.
Other questions?
Yeah, you kind of the probe calculation gave you the result of the AES 4 shape of the brain. Are you sure you didn't prejudice that result by the way you did your slicing your coordinate system, which you set up that problem?
I mean this is just a gauge choice, right? I'm having a four-dimensional brain in a five-dimensional space. So I go to a static gauge where I promote I take my four world volume coordinates, which are usually parameterized the space-time to be forms the space-time coordinates. So what I should find is basically, so this I do by saying degree function t x1, x2, x3. And then we basically assume that we try to look for a static solution, so we kick out the t, and then we hope that this, we look for a solution where this v becomes a function of x6 only. So this is the answer to the plug-in. But this does solve the equation of motion t.
Conclusions coordinate.
Yeah. And so this answer is also based on more to the derived. There may be other solutions that may be more general answers which we wouldn't have found by being restricted this kind of answer.
Anything else?
No.
No.
Could you please sketch a repeat? What is the matter constant of the three-dimensional theorem?
So this is the AN quiver when you take one of the gauge groups to
okay, so is there any relation to the constructing dimensions of Georgia at all? You know, they have similar gauge groups.
They certainly don't talk about gravity in higher dimensions. Okay. They have non-symmetric gauge groups, they have different coupling constants, normal coupling constants go to infinity.
So I don't say that it's the same model.
I wouldn't see a relation, but I guess I shouldn't say no to it.
Anything else? Thanks again.